Right now, I would say I'm a mix of Giannis and KD. I like going to the hole a little more than KD does. I like bumping into people a little more physical than KD. But I like to shoot the ball a little more than Giannis. So that's what I like to compare myself to. And also, Tracy McGrady. I get compared to him a lot, and I like that one a lot too. Those are three amazing players. It doesn't feel bad to be in the same conversation as them.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter, as always, at redrock_bball. We are 2 days away from the NBA draft, so of course, we will be doing what I think is pretty much an annual tradition on this podcast, and that is doing a mock draft for the 2018 draft, and to go through this mock draft, where we will be assuming the role of the GMs of these teams. I am joined by Kyle McEwen of Basketball Monster. Kyle, welcome.
Hey, Josh. Thanks for having me on.
And, of course, I'm also joined by Greg Ehrenberg of Basketball Monster.
As Greg runs in, we realize this could get dangerous.
Greg, welcome back.
I am never not going to be excited by that sound drop. Now that I have my own specific one, it's the best part of every time I'm on the show with you.
Yeah, Kyle, I've got to find something just to really bring it home for you. I haven't really found the perfect one. I don't want to force it. I've just got to find the right sound drop to introduce you when you're on the podcast. But Greg is sorted, so that's good. And we are sorted. We are going to be talking mock draft. We have assigned certain teams to each of us. And just a quick mention at the start, this is not a mock draft based on what we necessarily think is going to happen. I don't have inside sources into the league. Kyle doesn't have inside sources. Or maybe I'm speaking out of turn. Maybe you're plugged into all the GMs there, Kyle, and you know all this stuff. We don't know how this is going to go. No one knows how it's going to go. We have heard, Marvin Bagley's going to the Kings. Michael Porter's going to the Kings. Luka Doncic is going to the Kings. Trae Young's going to Atlanta. Jaren Jackson's going to Atlanta. Look, nobody knows this stuff. Apart from what we think, perhaps DeAndre Ayton is going to Phoenix. Nobody knows that for sure. Anyway, so trying to predict what all these teams are going to do without having any inside knowledge, it's pretty foolish. So this is us putting ourselves in the position of these GMs with a little bit of that maybe scuttlebutt that's going around it and how we see all these players fit. We're trying to take on, if we were in this position as a GM, this is the sort of decision making that we would make in that spot rather than trying to guess what these teams would do when we don't have any of that inside information. So just a quick mention of how all that is likely to go in this podcast. We've got lots of interesting selections. This is a really strange draft. I'm still waiting, Kyle. We spoke about this yesterday. Waiting for at this time last two seasons, we've had some pretty significant trades go down in this couple of day window before the draft. Last year, we had Dwight Howard, we had D'Angelo Russell. The year before that, I think it was Nicola Batum who was traded around this time as well. I think there was someone else.
Jimmy Butler.
Jimmy, he was traded on draft, not that, but there was a stretch of guys who was traded before the draft for the last couple of years, and nothing's happened this year. So perhaps something can go down to start things off. And as we're recording this, anything could happen, as we're always aware. So I've got the Woj alerts on, but let's go straight into this mock draft. I selfishly assigned myself pick number one as the Phoenix Suns GM. Again, every sign seems to be pointing to them selecting DeAndre Ayton with this pick, but I am not Ryan McDonough. I am in his job for this mock draft, and I am going to have pick one, and I am going to select Luka Doncic with that pick. We saw again another fantastic performance from Doncic in the Spanish League playoffs. I just think the importance of wing players in the draft, of people who are smart basketball players, who can handle the ball, who can distribute, who can spot up, who can shoot. And yes, Doncic's percentages don't look great. That doesn't mean that he can't shoot. He can actually shoot fairly well, and he can do many different things. A big man with a big-sized wing and guard type of player who can decelerate quickly, who can get his own shot, who can step back. I think in the way the NBA is going, it's hard for me to go past him, and I won't go past him. Kyle, do you have any thoughts on that pick, or would you have gone differently if you were Phoenix here?
No, I think Luka Doncic should be the first overall pick because he's the one guy that doesn't seem to have legitimate question marks. When you have to try to find and nitpick things about Luka Doncic's game and the things that he's already done. youngest ever EuroLeague MVP, correct?
Correct.
So I think all the narratives around the idea that Doncic was slipping on a bunch of teams' boards and that he was going to fall to number four or maybe even five, it's just not happening. Okay. And yes, the Suns may pass over on Doncic because they look around and they say, well, we've already got Devin Booker. We need to solidify our front court more, and we're just going to go with DeAndre Ayton. But as far as having any issues with Doncic going number one, I don't really see how anybody can argue too much against it.
Kyle, you're on the clock here for pick number two, and you have the Sacramento Kings. And this is, again, in the real-life draft, which we're going to see in 2 days' time. It feels like Ayton's going to go one, but shit is going to go wild from pick two. There's many different directions that the Kings can go in real life. And here, Kyle, you've got many different options. So which way are you leaning as you puff on a cigarette to fully embody the persona of Vlade Divac?
I think the biggest needs that the Kings have is general talent across the roster.
Yep, that's fair.
They need help in the front court more than they do the back court because they've got enough wing guys in Buddy Hield and in Bogdan Bogdanovic. And help me out, I don't know why I can't think of the point guard they drafted last year, De'Aaron Fox. They need defense. They need shooting. The Kings. If Luka Doncic isn't there, doesn't fall to number two, if the Suns don't take DeAndre Ayton, I think the Kings have to take DeAndre Ayton because he's one of the only other guys in the draft who you can look at and say, like, there's not a ton of question marks. Or if there are question marks, it's because you're looking a little bit too hard at this guy. And there's so many things to love that by the time you start to get to the things that they don't do well, you focus on them too much almost. So if this situation plays out, Doncic goes first, the Sacramento Kings should not pass over DeAndre Ayton at number two. And you're seeing rumors out there that the Kings, if Ayton doesn't fall to two, or if Ayton gets pick number one, that the Kings would then turn towards Marvin Bagley, which that would just be a patent example of why they're terrible at their job. Because if you go with Marvin Bagley, a guy who's essentially WCS 2.0, In many respects, you're standing pat like you have been, and holding your flaccid self in the cold winter air. And I hope that the Kings don't make that mistake again.
Well, nobody wants to be holding their flaccid selves, so hopefully Sacramento can take that advice on board. There are other guys that I could have taken there if I was in Sacramento spot. Jaren Jackson's really got star upside, I believe, but there's nothing wrong with taking Ayton there. It is probably the pick that I would have made in that spot. But Greg, now you have a significant decision to make, as there are a bunch of guys who probably haven't separated themselves at this spot in many directions that Atlanta can go. It's not like they have any foundational pieces really on this team that you need to be cognizant of when drafting. So, Greg, at pick three, the Atlanta Hawks, where are you going?
So I really like Jaren Jackson Jr. a lot, and I'm not even – if I had the second pick, I'm not sure that I would take – Ayton over Jaren Jackson. I think Jackson does so many things really well, and he fits really well into the modern style of NBA. The one issue with him is I don't think he has the like MVP type upside because he's not really a scorer. So there is a little bit of concern maybe how is he going to fit in Atlanta, because I do think that he's a better fit for a team like Phoenix, say, where they have an established scorer like Devin Booker. And I think if a team like Atlanta is going to draft Jaren Jackson expecting to be like a high usage guy, that's not going to happen. But if you look at how good Jaren Jackson, I think, could be on the defensive end, which is the biggest question mark that I have for Ayton, Jackson, I think, could be a defensive player of the year type candidate. He also has the range out to the NBA 3-point line. He does a little bit of everything really well. And on the offensive end, there's no one skill that's going to make him like one of the better offensive players in the league, but all around, I think he's a really good glue guy, kind of in the mold of like what a Draymond Green could do. And I think that he's a really solid prospect.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that. I'm in a similar boat to you. I would consider him over Ayton. I probably would have ended up taking Ayton there, but Jackson's a guy who does have offensive upside as well. He can handle the ball a little bit. He looks a little bit clumsy at times, but he can shoot the three. His defensive stuff is absolutely elite. You've heard people talk that he's the best defensive prospect to come out since Anthony Davis, and that's obviously really high praise. He's really young. I love this pick here, and I think that if he's falling anywhere outside the top five, it's nonsense, and teams should be scrambling to get their hands on Jaren Jackson. Kyle, you're back on deck. You have the Memphis Grizzlies at pick four. Again, still many players to go with here. We know they've had the injuries with Mike Conley last season. Marc Gasol still around. Who knows for how long? What are you doing as Chris Wallace?
With the Memphis Grizzlies, I think the as long as they've got Marc Gasol on that team, as long as they've got Mike Conley, your biggest holes on that team are on the wing. Shooting guard, small forward, power forward. What are you going to do there going for? Moving forward, they've got Dylan Brooks, who showed up well as a rookie last season, so maybe they feel confident that they've got one of the shooting guard or small forward positions seized up there. But you're going to want somebody who can do a little bit of everything, who's going to be a can't-miss guy on defense in many regards, and but who can also do things on offense. So I'm going to go with Mikal Bridges here. He's got great, you know, he's just 6'7", but he's got that 7'2 wingspan that's going to allow him to be a pest on defense the same way that he was in college. So that's who I'm going to take with the fourth pick for the Grizzlies.
That is that has gone completely off the board that I would have had in my head. But I did hear, you know, rumors going around today that the Bridges is a top five type of a prospect according to some teams. So that's an interesting selection. That means that the teams below here have got some pretty interesting options ahead of them, with a couple of guys who is perhaps suggested to be top five picks have now slid. So I'm on the board with Dallas at pick five, and I've got quite a few options here at this spot. I've got a toss up between Marvin Bagley. There's Mohamed Bamba there as well. Do I go with a guard? You know, I'm big on getting wings and guards as well, but I'm going to find it hard to pass on some of these big men, even though I do have concerns about how they're going to fit in the NBA. Yeah, this is a tough one, Kyle. You've thrown me off completely with that pick here, just by giving me options that I didn't think I'd necessarily have at this spot. I'm going to go with, I'm going to take Marvin Bagley at this spot, just to give Dallas an extra offensive option to pair with Dennis Smith. His defense is a real worry. He is almost, he's a marginal wingspan guy, just a plus one in terms of height versus wingspan when you get other guys, you know, plus sixes, plus sevens, really big for rim protection. That's a real concern. They have always been rumored to be a guy or a team that's looking for centers in free agency, whether that's DeAndre Jordan, DeMarcus Cousins, any of the other centers who are available, Yusuf Nurkic perhaps as another option there. So perhaps getting another guy there to pair with Bagley in that front court, or just running things similarly to how they were trying to run things with Dirk this season and play more offensive-minded centers. So I'm going to go with Bagley. I don't feel great about it. I feel very conflicted about that pick, Greg. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, so I think that, to me, the top three guys are pretty clear-cut, at least in my opinion, in Ayton, Doncic, and Jaren Jackson. And then I think there's a bunch of guys that are like risk-reward picks where I don't really know what to make of. Certainly like the Bridges, Wendell Carter, Bamba, Trae Young. I think there's a lot of guys who I see with like a wide range of outcomes. And I don't necessarily think any of them are bad picks, but I could certainly see a lot of these guys being busts also.
Yeah, it is a really weird spot in this draft. I agree with you on those top three guys as well. And I've got the next pick as well, with all the Orlando Magic at pick six. Again, Bumba's still there on the board. But I am going to go with my, I guess, my overall drafting philosophy and trying to get guys who can be creation-type players. And I'm going to take Trae Young out of Oklahoma. We know the Magic have absolutely nothing happening really in the backcourt at all. Young's a guy that shouldered a significant load last season, one of the biggest loads we've ever seen in terms of offensive responsibility, with assist rate of almost 50%, a usage of 37%, just taking every shot and setting up all the other ones that he didn't take. So that's massive for them, a guy whose defensive limitations are a concern, but perhaps a guy like Steve Clifford is a defensive enough coach who was able to get success with Kemba Walker with similar limitations, not quite the same as what Trae Young does, but his offensive ability for this team, who does call out for someone who can shoot at least, and they've really struggled with that. That's the direction I have to go. Plus, I really like Young's upside. And again, trying to look at best player available here, and I think that Trae is probably that guy that fits the bill there for the Magic. Kyle, you have got pick seven. You have got the Chicago Bulls. If there's any team outside of Sacramento who's prone to do dumb shit, this is them. Not saying you have to necessarily take that on board and do dumb shit, but you have the opportunity to correct what is almost guaranteed to be a mistake from them as we head into Thursday's draft.
Yeah, I look at the Bulls and I feel like they've got tons of holes, or they could go in a lot of different directions. Talent, they need help in the front court. Even if you're looking at Lauri Markkanen and you're saying, well, they've got a power forward slash center of the future, it's like, well, Lauri Markkanen has a somewhat limited skill set or a boxed in skill set. I don't think you're going to be looking for him to be a big playmaker or a, you know, he's not going to score in isolation possessions a lot. So you're going to need help. You're looking for somebody who can be a versatile defender for this Bulls team. Legit wing defense, hopefully some scoring, because a lot of the scoring on this team is just youth, and it's unreliable in a lot of respects. There's a part of me that looks at the Bulls and says Robin Lopez is not part of their future. Cristiano Felicio is not a starting caliber center in today's NBA, in my opinion, in a lot of respects. So they should probably go with somebody like Wendell Carter Jr. or Mo Bamba at this point. But we've also heard the Bulls say that they are looking for somebody who can be a good 3-and-D wing guy for them, a good two-way wing player. So if I'm looking at this situation and thinking who the Bulls are actually going to take, I think it's probably going to be Miles Bridges, and they're going to go that route in just trying to solidify that wing position next to Chris Dunn, next to Zach LaVine. They're going to want somebody to slide in at small forward and start next to those guys and start building with those guys next season. I think that'll be Miles Bridges.
Greg, how do you view the Miles Bridges pick there? A few other guys sliding down the draft board, but I like, Kyle, your idea of going for these wing players. How do you see that, Greg?
Yeah, probably a bit too smart for the Bulls in real life. I think that they're probably destined to take a Michael Porter Jr. in that spot. That's the feeling that I get of what they're going to end up doing. But I think that Kyle did make a smart pick. I think that he's a solid player. I don't necessarily think that he's the best fit for the Bulls right now, just because I kind of see him as kind of like another guy who's a glue type guy, as opposed to the superstar type player that you could really build your team around. But at the very least, I think he's one of the higher floor players in the draft.
Yeah, I like Bridges as a player. I don't know which Bridges I actually prefer. I guess some of that is team fit dependent as well. I probably would take Miles over Mikal in a lot of cases, but for some teams, I wouldn't. So, yeah, I like both those guys. Again, really getting those wings early on in the draft. Greg, you have the next two picks, and number 8 is the Cleveland Cavaliers. Are you going to be able to resist passing on Mo Bamba and Michael Porter Jr., who are both still available?
Yeah, well, I don't really like Michael Porter Jr. very much, so he's going to pass for me with the next two picks. For the Cavs, it's going to be Bamba for me if he's still available at this point. He's somebody who I think it's hard to look at him and not kind of think of Hasheem Thabeet, but Bamba I do think is a really high upside prospect, and one thing that's really nice about him is despite the size, he did shoot fairly well, almost 70% from the free throw line last year. He does have some range to his jump shot, so I think there is a role where we could see him fit into the modern NBA. I have kind of been thinking more about the center position and how it fits into the league right now, and going back to Ayton again, one of the big concerns I have with him is the center kind of becoming just an outdated position in the NBA, kind of like what the running back is in the NFL, maybe not the parallel that you would get over in Australia, Josh, but basically what we have in the NFL is we found that the running back is not really all that valuable of a position. It's kind of easy to fill with replacement level players. And then also that it doesn't have a ton of value on the field because teams have started to realize that passing the ball is more efficient than running the ball, kind of like how we're seeing in the NBA now. Teams are seeing that the three-point shot is more efficient than the two-point shot. So I'm a little concerned with taking centers in general, but because Bamba has the perimeter shot, I'm a little less concerned with him finding a role in the modern NBA.
Yeah, I tend to agree with all of that there. Yeah, he's still got some strength issues, some defensive issues, despite his really long length and his rim protection. Offensively, the shot's starting to look really, really good, but there's a lot of question marks, but I think it's a strong pick there for the Cavs. And you're also on the board with the Knicks now at pick number 9. Lots of different guys. There's a few guys who I really, really like are still available here for New York. So which way are you going, Greg?
All right, so I think that this is going to be a pick a little bit off the board, but I'm going to go with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander from Kentucky. Now, I know that the Knicks drafted Frank Ntilikina last year, and Ntilikina showed a lot of promise as a defensive player. On the off, not that he's going to be able to produce enough on that side unless he develops a jump shot. And if I look at Alexander, there's a couple of things. Number one, I think he's another guy with a lot of upside. And I think at this point where the Knicks are in their development, I think that they should be kind of shooting for the home run picks. And the other thing, too, which is something I've discussed with you previously, Josh, is there's something about Kentucky guys where the guys that Calipari recruits, a lot of them just turn into good NBA. So I have a bias towards Kentucky players in the draft, where I just tend to think more of them are going to turn into quality NBA players.
Yeah, that's well, I've talked about that plenty of times as well. These guys who just, they don't get an opportunity to showcase their skills fully at Kentucky, and Shai is one of those players who has an opportunity. He's big. Frank, we saw them experimenting with him playing off the ball at the end of last season. They could play together in the backcourt. I think it's an interesting pick. Again, this draft, there's so many weird things that can go on here. Kyle, what do you think of those last two picks, Bamba and Gilgeous-Alexander?
I don't think you can go wrong with Bamba in today's NBA. I worry that he won't necessarily translate the way that a lot of people maybe expect him to, because Mo Bamba has this length, that 7'10" length that is, it's just out of this world to see. And he's going to have to, I guess what gives me a little bit of pause is you see a lot of his blocks come from, not because he's making the right decision necessarily, but because he has such great length that he'll jump super early, and then the shooter will try to change their shot, and he'll just be able to move his arm into the wherever they're trying to change their shot. It sounds kind of bizarre and hitchy, because it is, and I just don't know if Mo Bamba is going to be somebody who's going to charge onto the scene and demand playing time in his rookie season. I'm afraid he might have more hurdles to jump over than what people are expecting, but you love the fact that he's an elite potential shot blocker. That should be almost no doubt, as long as he can stay out of foul trouble. And then the fact that Bamba has the ability to potentially stretch the floor in the NBA is obviously tremendous in today's game. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I worry about the fit. I know as soon as you were making the pick, you were already kind of like, not defending it or whatever, but essentially saying like he'll be able to find a way to fit next to Frank Ntilikina. But I do think it's almost duplicative in some respects, just that these guys have such similar games in a lot of respects. And that does concern me, the lack of shooting between the two of them.
Now, I've got the next pick, which is pick 10 to Philadelphia 76ers. And to be honest, I don't even know what to do here at this spot. There are options of guys who I do really, really like. But I talk about taking best player available. With Philadelphia, you've got two established stars already. You've got Ben Simmons, you've got Joel Embiid. This is a team that's pushing to become, you know, they want to be the number one seed in the East next season. They want to be an NBA Finals team. That's what they would like to be doing. Of course, I don't have the requisite collar size to be making this selection with total authority for the Sixers, but you know, I'm debating Michael Porter. Is that, as much as I just don't love him as a player, do I have to go that way? Wendell Carter I really like, but he just doesn't work at all with Embiid, I don't think. Do I take a guy like Greg, as you mentioned, in Kentucky with those players who take steps forward? Kevin Knox is getting all this, you know, pub at the moment. I'm not massively into him. Do I take a guard like Zaire Smith? I don't know, but I think it is really hard for me, despite my misgivings about what Michael Porter can do. I don't think I can go past him here. He could be part of trades that they make for veteran players, whether that is someone like Kawhi Leonard, or whether it's involved in something like sign-in trades for LeBron James in order to fit stuff under the cap with him opting into contracts and all that sort of stuff. I think they have to take Michael Porter here and figure it out. He'll be able to have, you know, a role on this team. He'll be able to do something. They don't have to push it. And I'm assuming that his medical stuff is checking out when making this selection. Greg, I know you don't like Porter necessarily much either, but I found it hard to pass on in there.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Also, something that I find in general that I'll tend to do a lot, that I think a lot of people do, when I say I really like or dislike somebody, it's always relative to what other people think of them. So I don't like Porter relative to going, oh, he's going to be a star. He should be going second to Sacramento. I don't think he's a terrible pick, specifically at this part in the draft where it's farther down as opposed to second, where I think that there's better prospect. The questions I have with Michael Porter is stuff like the quote that you read at the top of the podcast, where he thinks that he's like, oh, Durant, Tracy McGrady, all these people are comparing me to them. No, you're comparing yourself to them. Nobody else is. Other people think that you're maybe a one-dimensional scorer, definitely as upside as a scorer, but doesn't really do a lot else. There's character concerns with him. Things I've read that the interviews with him haven't been great with teams, and then he kind of seems like a dickhead overall in the locker room. But at this point in the draft, I think that he's more sensible of a pick than like two or three.
Yeah, that is the dickhead stuff is a concern, I think. But I think you do have to go with him there at pick 10, Kyle. I believe it's you there at pick 11, the Charlotte Hornets, a team mired in mediocrity. Can you drag them out of it with this pick?
No. The biggest need for the Hornets is a two-way wing with size, but who can also shoot the ball. You can't. They've been doomed by so many of their picks in the past that because they've picked somebody who was lacking something that you can't be missing. You can't have a small forward who only can participate on the defensive end of the court because his jump shot is like it's the axis of the earth is gone askew. In Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. So with the Hornets, there's part of me that wants to take Wendell Carter Jr. and say, hey, you know what? You've got your legitimate starting center of the future. Somebody who's going to be able to develop that outside shot, be a competent enough rim protector, has the ability to learn how to guard on the perimeter, even if he can't do that yet. I want to say that, but I just don't see the Hornets going that route with the fact that they still have Dwight Howard on the roster. They still have Cody Zeller on the roster. They've got Frank Kaminsky there. So they're going to need somebody who's going to be a small forward slash power forward type player and somebody who can legitimately help stretch that floor around Kemba Walker, around Nick Batum, around Dwight Howard. Somebody to help Marvin Williams, and I think that that's one of the guys who's been rising up the draft board lately, and that's Kevin Knox out of Kentucky. I see a lot of Jason Tatum in him, to be honest. I think there's a lot of question marks about Kevin Knox's defense, but at 6'9 with a 6'11 wingspan, closer to 6'12 wingspan, and the fact that he's shown quite a bit on offense and the upside that he has there. I think Kevin Knox is a guy who you know is going to come in and if nothing else contribute on offense, and there's the potential for him to be a little bit more than what we've seen so far.
Yeah, I like that pick there. That would be, yeah, I would have smashed him at pick 12. I think for the Clippers, exactly what they would have needed there. I like that Kevin Knox pick. And as Greg alluded to earlier, Kentucky players, you're always giving them the benefit of the doubt just in terms of displaying other skills. So I've got the Clippers at the next two picks, pick 12 and pick 13 here. I can't let Wendell Carter Jr. slip any further, so he is an easy pick there at number 12. And my next one, I'm going to go with a wing player. I've got two options here who I'm debating, Zaire Smith and Lonnie Walker IV. I am going to take... I think I'm going to take Zaire Smith here at this point. You know, hyper-athletic player, a really strong wing defense. You know, can make up for some of the issues that Danilo Gallinari has at that spot, whether he remains on the team long-term, who knows. There's got Tobias Harris there who can provide offensive punch as well. So I'm going to take Wendell Carter and Zaire Smith with picks 12 and 13. Greg, what do you think?
Yeah, I like it. I think that there's a very good chance that the Clippers are not going to hold on to both these picks in the draft. And you also talked about Danilo Gallinari. I think that he's somebody who could potentially get traded with one of those picks to move up in the draft. It's an interesting spot for the Clippers. The other thing that I've read is that they have talked about moving Tobias Harris, which I would not do if I'm them. I really like Harris a lot, and I think he has a really, really good, valuable, team-friendly contract. But the Clippers are a team that I think are kind of being overlooked heading into next year because they traded away Blake Griffin. But I kind of think that trade made them better than it made them worse. And I don't think that's the popular opinion.
Yeah, no, they Tobias Harris played extraordinarily well after he came across, and getting a couple of extra, really valuable rotation type players here in Carter and Smith. I do like the direction that I went, because of course I went that direction. Kyle, at pick 14, the Denver Nuggets, they just missed the playoffs. They are desperate to get back next season. What are you looking at in terms of getting a player here?
My initial reaction with the Nuggets is that they need a small forward of the future on the team, someone who can play both ways, provides, but who could potentially provide a little bit of rim protection and just overall versatile defense for them from small forward up in to front court. I don't know if that guy is available at this point in the draft, though. So you might see the Nuggets kind of just add a little bit of depth to the squad. And if I was going to take somebody here for them right now, I'd probably just add Jiminy Christmas. I'd probably go with Robert Williams and just grab him, say you've got somebody who can be a rim protector, maybe somebody who you can learn to play next to Nikola Jokic and be that consistent rim protector for you. Not necessarily in love with going with him, but I just don't, with some of the other wings that have already been taken, I don't necessarily see the best option there. You might look at a guy like Troy Brown Jr. as somebody to consider taking and using in that small forward spot for them. He's got good length at 6'10", but overall, I think I'd end up going with Robert Williams.
Interesting pick. We know Williams can protect the rim. He's a horrible shooter, provides no spacing, but I'm getting feeling a little bit better about him than I was, say, a couple of weeks ago when looking at what he's been able to do. Of course, Mason Plumlee is in there at the backup center at the moment, but you're not basing anything based on what Mason Plumlee's doing. And we're at pick 14 of the draft. You're not expecting to, look, I need this guy to be a 100% starter. If it happens, great. You know, people can become trade chips, all that sort of stuff. We see NBA rosters turn over about 60% of their guys every 3 or 4 years. So, and getting someone who can develop into a skill that's it's highly valuable, and that's protecting the rim, is what Williams does have that ability to do. Greg, you're back on the clock here at pick 15. Washington Wizards, what are you thinking here? They've got obviously massive depth concerns, some quality starters, but you've got many different options here to go on the board, especially if you're looking for wings.
Yeah, so there's actually a guy who's left here that I like a good amount for them. That's Lonnie Walker. So one of the big issues for the Wizards is that they just don't have scoring off the bench, and that's something that I think Walker could be able to contribute for them. He did show the ability to score the basketball at Miami last year. One concern that I do have with him is he only shot 35% from three in college last year. So the idea that he was kind of a score-first player without really a ton of other skill sets but wasn't a knockdown shooter is a little bit of a concern coming to the NBA. But I think that he fits the Wizards pretty well and he fills a hole for them.
Yeah, that's a really good pick. They do need that. Jody Meeks is obviously serving that suspension to begin the season. Not that he's precluding you from doing anything. The backup guards, Ty Lawson, Thomas Satoransky, Tim Frazier, wing players, Kelly Oubre, who could be seeing more time in the starting lineup, depending on what happens with Markieff Morris. I think that's a strong pick there. That's the exact pick I would have made in that type of situation. And now at pick 16, I am back on the clock with the Phoenix Suns. They selected Luka Doncic at pick 1. Yeah, scouring the board, going, do I take a big man here? We know they've got a need at center, but then also the clear best player available, in my opinion, isn't a center at this spot. So I'm not sure exactly which direction to go here, but I'm going to settle on taking Colin Sexton, the point guard from Alabama. If there was another center on the board there, maybe if Robert Williams had still been there and Kyle hadn't taken him a couple of picks earlier, I might have gone in that direction. But I'm taking Sexton as the guy who I view as the best prospect there on the board, whether he fits in as a backup and they play him behind a Booker Doncic backcourt, or they go with Doncic, Booker, Jackson, Sexton at times as a starting four, and then having Bender, Chris at center, really small stuff. Sexton's obviously really competitive. He does have issues with tunnel vision, but I think when you've got a team with Doncic and Booker there, it might rein him in terms of he shouldn't be taking every single shot available, and maybe that is the best thing for this team. So that's the direction I am going with that pick, Kyle. I'll let you critique my selection, and then you can make the pick for the Bucks at 17.
Colin Sexton, he's interesting. You like that he gets up the court. He's relentless in a lot of respects. You don't really love his size at just 6'1 or thereabouts, but he's got a 6'7 reach, so that's okay. I worry about his size and his impact in the NBA and his consistency. But as far as his aggressiveness, it's definitely at this point in the draft worth grabbing a Colin Sexton and seeing if he can be somebody who, even if he doesn't necessarily develop into a consistent deep shooter or a great playmaker for the rest of it, for in his career, he is somebody who should be able to be a pesky on ball defender. Looking at the Bucks, Troy Brown Jr. is kind of the guy at the top of my draft board right now, but he's also not necessarily what the Bucks should be looking for. I mean, the Bucks don't have many holes on their team other than to say that they need a versatile front court defender who can also stretch the floor like Thon Maker, but who is actually somebody who they can turn to immediately. So, and that's not necessarily somebody you're going to get out of the draft, especially, you know, just outside, you know, after getting through the lottery and whatnot. So ultimately, you're probably going to end up just going with the best player available at this point, and I would end up taking Troy Brown Jr.
Troy Brown, who was I believe, 29% three-point shooter in college, so fits in perfectly next to Giannis, and his 28% three-point shooting. Of course, both those guys can improve, but he's a guy that played a lot of point guard at Oregon last season. He's one of those versatile ball handlers. They've got like Giannis, like Chris Middleton, Eric Bledsoe, obviously there. Just another guy who can come in, and when those guys sit on the bench, you're left with, you know, groups of Sterling Brown and Tony Snell, guys who really can't handle the ball at all. Of course, Malcolm Brogdon's still there as well. So just really, again, big wing-type players. I believe Troy Brown is going to bring it up here. Yeah, he's 6'6". Yeah, decent enough wingspan. It's a strong pick at this point in the draft. So I do like that selection there from you, Kyle. Now, Greg, you're on the board with the San Antonio Spurs. Who knows what's happening with Kawhi at this point? He's still on the Spurs. What direction are you going to be looking at with this selection?
Yeah, I think this is definitely a little tricky not knowing the situation with Kawhi, because are they still going to be picking here? Is Kawhi going to be on the team? Is Kawhi not going to be on the team? If they trade him, what do they get back in return? For now, I'm just going to assume the team is what it is now, and I'm going to actually take Khyree Thomas from Creighton. So one thing of note here is that for whatever reason, I adopted Creighton as my favorite college team when I was in college, because I went to Elon and we had a terrible basketball team, and I just decided that I liked Creighton that year. So maybe there's a little bit of bias there, but Khyree Thomas, by all reports, what I've read about him, what I've seen, really strong defensive player, and then also a 3-and-D player. He shot over 41% from three in college last year, so I think he's somebody who would be able to fit in with the Spurs right away. And if they are going to be holding on to Kawhi and LaMarcus Aldridge, I think that he's a good piece to add to a playoff team.
And Danny Green may not be around on this team. As you said, great wingspan, good steal rate. And if you've heard my podcast at all, you know that I talk about guys with good steal rates. They often, or very, very often, are able to translate into successful NBA players. It's probably not the direction I would have gone with this pick, but it's really hard to fault it at this spot. And I've got a question for you, Greg. Creighton, I know all about Creighton. Where is it? Where is Creighton in America? I've got no idea where it actually is located.
I couldn't even tell you that. the reason I liked Creighton is because in college, that was like when I first started betting on sports, and they had Doug McDermott there at the time. Doug McDermott was my favorite basketball player for way too long, to the point where I still like him now. I think I'll roster him in DFS sometimes just because I liked Creighton when I was in college. But there was a time that they went like on a run of like 13 games in a row where they won against the spread that I was riding them. And that's really where most of my Creighton fandom comes from.
Kyle, do you know where Creighton is?
No, I don't. I guess maybe Indiana.
I just looked it up. It's in Omaha. So yeah,
Omaha, Nebraska.
There you go. I literally had no idea. I know I'm pretty good at knowing where colleges that don't have place names in their name are from. I just had no idea with Creighton. So I'm glad that we fixed it. Hey, we all learned something today. So that's obviously interesting there. Now, Atlanta's back on the board. Greg, you chose for them at pick 3, Jaren Jackson Jr., Triple J, is off the board. for. He's not off the board. He's on the roster for the Hawks now. So you've got pick 19, their second first round selection. They've got three of them. What are you doing here?
This is where it gets a little tough, because we go through the draft board and have to try to figure out who's still available. So for here, since the Hawks have three players that are, I mean, three picks in the first round, I'm going to take Eli Okobo from France. So there's a couple of reasons for this. Number one, I'm not totally bought into Dennis Schroeder being a long-term solution at point guard.
There's no way he's sticking on this team. There is no way. And I say that without any knowledge, but there is no way. He won't be on this team by the end of next season.
So there are definitely things that I like about Schroeder. He's a good playmaker. He could score. I just think that the general basketball fan will probably think that he's better than what he actually is. He's a terrible defender. I don't think he really contributes to winning basketball a ton. Where if you look at Okobo, a little bit of an unknown because he's from France and I haven't gotten to watch him a ton, so I'm going a little bit off of what I've read about him. But at least the shooting numbers look good. Shot 83.5% from the free throw line, also over 41% from three, so that's always encouraging to see. I think that he could be a long-term solution to them at point guard, whereas I think that the defensive play of Dennis Schroeder probably prevents him from being the point guard of a winning team for really any point in time that he's in the league.
I'm all in on Okobo. Really good shooter. The big, decent size point guard, can provide defense. Oh, I think it's a great pick. Yeah, I think he's going to be... There's a chance that he is a guy that ends up better than Colin Sexton, that he ends up better than Shea. He could end up better than Trae Young. There's a big, big upside here for Okobo. Young guy, played in France last season, can shoot the ball well, can defend, can pass. Really, really interested in what he can do. So I do like that pick there. Kyle, do you have any thoughts on Kyrie Thomas or Eli Okobo?
No, I think you guys covered it.
Cool. Now, I'm on the board here, Minnesota. I am assuming the role of Tom Thibodeau, so I need to get as putrid-looking hairstyle as I possibly can. Not far off there, to be honest, at the moment. Need to get a gravelly voice going to announce his selection, so in my best Tom Thibodeau impression with an Australian accent, I'm going to be selecting Kevin Huerter out of Maryland. All right. Now that shit's out of the way. A shooter is exactly what this team needs. They don't shoot threes. They can't get anything going. Jamal Crawford has declined his player option, so Herter's in there. He's going to have his ass kicked by Tibbs, and he's not going to play at all in his first season. We know that. But maybe something clicks that, hey, we need someone who can knock down a shot, and then maybe by the time he hits his third season, he's able to contribute for Tom here in Minnesota. Is a chance he goes four or five spots higher than this, a guy that can knock down threes on the move, catch and shoot, can actually handle the ball, playmake as well. Who knows how long Andrew Wiggins is going to be on this team? That contract is an absolute disaster, I think. And even if Hurt is just a bench player, who plays that 25 minutes a game that Jamal Crawford played last season, I think that's really strong as a ball handling, shooting, and a guy with a little bit of creation ability as well. So happy to get him there at pick number 20. Kyle, you're on the board the next two picks. You've got the Utah Jazz at 21 and then Chicago backing up for their second spot at pick 22. The Jazz obviously unearthed Donovan Mitchell last season. Let's see what you can unearth at pick 21.
I think the Jazz's biggest need is probably at power forward, with Derek Favors seemingly likely to go somewhere else, unless they are, you know, bought on him being a part of their future going forward and they're willing to pay for it. The Jazz could use more wing depth, backup front court depth, and more scoring around.
They need scoring, Dennis.
Yeah, so they need more scoring on that team. That was an issue coming in last year. It's one of the reasons why Donovan Mitchell was allowed to blossom, because he was an aggressive scorer coming into the league. So looking at what the Jazz need, I'm trying to find somebody who's going to be able to play on the wing, maybe stretch the floor a little bit, but if nothing else, be a good defensive presence there, similar to the way that our boy Royce was last year as a rookie. So I'm looking at Melvin Frazier. He's got 6'6", he's 6'6", but he's got a 7'1 wingspan out of Tulane. So Melvin Frazier to the Jazz.
Now, I did three draft pods over the last week with Sam Vecenie, Cole Swicker, and Brian Schroeder. And both Brian and Cole, they made points. They wanted to talk about Melvin Frazier. Like, I need to talk about this guy. So athletic guy, really long, fits perfectly with the Jazz defensive upside, a little bit of increased ability offensively. Yeah, he's going to fit in perfectly with his team in that Thabo Sefolosha role, whether he is back or not. Can just fit in there, can play the two, the three, really provide some punch and some defensive ability on a team that obviously values that. At 22, Kyle, the Chicago Bulls are on the board again. Excluding the option of them selling this pick, what are you going to do to make that selection?
I think that they need, went with Miles Bridges with their pick with number 7 overall earlier in the draft. And I'm going to continue to stay kind of on the wing, but somebody with a little bit bigger size who could maybe play kind of like that Pau Zipser role that we saw last season, where he would roll up as the small ball power forward. And I'm going to go with Zanin Musa out of Bosnia and Herzegovina.
I'll accept it. Zanin Musa is.
You would have Nintendo voice now.
I sounded like a Zoolander character trying to say that. That was brutal.
Zanin Musa is 6'9". He can score. He can shoot. He is prone to losing his shit on the court, so that's going to be interesting. His defensive stuff is a negative. But yeah, just getting a guy who can score on the wing, decent size, can play up at the four, as you mentioned. Yeah, really, really strong, you know, type of scorer and shooter who, yeah, he could go high. I've seen him, you know, be mocked even into the top 15 at times. So I think getting him at pick 22 is pretty solid. Greg, Musa and Frazier, Kyle's last two picks. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think that they're both fine plays. I mean, once we get to this point in the draft, I think it becomes really hard to really separate a lot of these players from each other, and then also becomes a little bit hard if you're as disorganized as I am to just look at it and keep in mind who everybody was taken with the earlier picks also to figure out how everybody fits in with the other picks that are made so far. But individually, I think both are fine prospects.
Yeah, I mainly just threw to you there because I needed to stall so I could work out who I was going to pick with this selection, because I have the Indiana Pacers coming up here at pick 23, and there's a few interesting players on the board here. I'm going to take from Villanova Dante DiVincenzo, a guy who, again, I stressed this again with Brian on the draft preview the other day. He's not a white guy shooter. That's not what he is. Like, he can shoot, but he's not Kyle Korver. He's not JJ Redick. He's a guy that can handle the ball. He's ridiculously athletic. One of the best verticals at the combine, if not the best. You know, fast, can move the ball, can play at the two. Indiana, they've got a non-guarantee on Darren Collinson there, so there's a potential that, yeah, they move on there. Corey Joseph's not lighting the world on fire. Just an extra ball handler on this team, a guy that with some athleticism, with some ability to be a facsimile Victor Oladipo, not the same guy, clearly, but someone who can provide a similar role off the bench. Yeah, that's the direction that I am I'm going with Indiana's pick there at 23. Kyle, DiVincenzo, do you like that pick? Do you think there's a chance that he goes higher than this in real life?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a chance that he goes higher. He's interesting. You love his competitiveness. Can he do it? Can he actually be somebody who's, oh gosh, I don't want to make a Ron Baker comparison. is he Ron Baker or is he better?
I think he's better.
I don't know.
We will definitely see. Now, Greg, you're on the board at Portland at pick 24. All right, let's have it.
Yeah, I'm going through the guys on the board, and I'm trying to find a big man to put on Portland's roster. I think for now I'm looking at Amari Spellman. So one of the big issues we've seen with Portland is depth in the front court. They obviously don't need any more guards because they already have Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum on the team right now. And we don't know what the long-term future of Nurkic is going to be there. So Spellman is maybe not the highest upside pick in the draft, except he is a big man who is able to spread the floor, shoot threes. That's kind of a common theme for me. I'm always going to be looking for prospects who shoot the ball well. And a big man, 6'9", shot 43% from three last year. So I think that he could fit in and help spread the floor with Lillard and McCollum.
That's Amari Spellman, who I am early on dubbing the nickname the Wizard. I'm not necessarily big on him here, and I'm actually pissed with my own pick at pick 23. There's someone who I would have picked in that situation, but I completely like missed him on my board here. So when he goes off the board later on, I'll let you know. But I wish I could have a mulligan on that DiVincenzo pick. As much as I like him, there's another guy there that I would have selected. Yeah, who knows what's happening with Nurkic in Portland. Spellman is like, I'm not as high on him as what you are, but again, we're talking about the 24th pick in the draft when I'm talking about superstar type potentials here. Kyle, you're on with the Lakers at 25. Which direction are you going?
When I look at the Lakers roster, I think that they need a center of the future in many respects. Versatile front court defender to play next to Julius Randle if Julius Randle is going to end up staying there. They need legit shooting on the roster. They need legit wing defense. So there's a lot of holes on that Lakers team. That's not to say that there's not also a lot of good talent there. Ultimately, I'm just going to go with the guy who I think has the kind of the highest floor or the most can't miss. Kita Bates-Jop is going. He's 6'8", but he's got a 7'3" wingspan. And if you notice a lot of the things about the guys that I'm targeting, it's players who have the potential to be a great perimeter defender, but also be able to step up a little bit, maybe protect the rim, or just be a pest because of their length. Kita Bates-Jop. How do I say that first name?
I think it's Kita. But yeah, I'm willing to be corrected by that at some point. He is a guy that had a really strong block rate in college, good steal rate, only 6'8", a little bit older on the older side. I believe he was a junior. But yeah, that's a strong pick. Now, this is going to be my last pick here in the first round at 26 with the Philadelphia 76ers. I selected Michael Porter, Giannis, KD Jr. earlier on at pick number 10. And now I've got, that guy that I passed on earlier on. Do I go with that guy here? I've got a couple of other guys who I do really like, but it is going to be hard. And in fact, I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going past DeAnthony Melton here out of USC. A long defensive point guard who has shown significant strides in his jump shot from just what we've seen in workouts. Of course, he didn't play last season due to, transgressions against the NCAA. So it's hard for me to pass him here. If he went at pick 16, where I pick Colin Sexton to the Suns, I wouldn't be shocked at all. I think he probably is going to be a top 20 player in this draft. Really, really excited about Melton, and great for me to be able to get him here at pick 26. Greg, Do you like Melton, or are you worried about that shot?
In general, I'm always a little bit concerned about somebody who didn't shoot well at all in college. So it is a concern for me. But once again, once we get to this point in the draft, I don't think that you can go too far wrong, because there's no real significant bust at this point in the draft. And there is upside there. So I think he's worth taking a flyer on at this point.
Massive wingspan, a guy that averaged 2.8 steals per 40 and 1.5 blocks per 40 in his freshman season at USC. So the defensive potential is quite significant. Kyle, pick 27 is you. Pick 28 is you with this, the Celtics and the Warriors. Let's start with Boston at pick 27.
I'm going to go a little bit, I don't know if it's too crazy, but Mitchell Robinson, 6'11", 7'4 wingspan. He dropped out of, he was a five-star recruit who, enrolled at Western Kentucky, but then he opted to skip college and train for the draft. So I'm just thinking that maybe the Celtics kind of go outside the box here a little bit and try to pick up somebody who's got enough size, potential for them to mold going forward, because the Celtics are just so deep as a team right now that it's hard to see them leaning on anybody that they draft this year at the end of the first round. You know, it's a lot different than taking Jason Tatum third overall.
I'm big on Mitchell Robinson as a pick here. When I selected at 16 with the Suns with Colin Sexton, I was debating, do I take Sexton here or do I take Mitchell Robinson there at that spot? I think he's got that upside. Obviously, a really highly regarded recruit who runs hard, athletic, and protects the rim. I think it's a really, really good pick there. And at any of these other spots that came between 16 and there, I really did consider him. I considered him at 20 to Minnesota, but thought that's not making much sense with Towns around. But yeah, considering with Indiana and with Philadelphia, but the Embiid thing scared me off a little bit there. So I love that pick. Now, Golden State is next on the board. Kyle, where are you, which direction are you going there for the Warriors? And please tell me it's Grayson Allen.
sugar plums. You know what? I actually forgot to write down that I was drafting for the Warriors. So you're finding.
I think I'm supposed to be drafting for the Warriors.
Well, I screwed it up. So Greg, you can take that one then.
Yeah, I think I'm actually I'm closing us out. I have the next.
You've got the next three. Yeah. All right.
Okay. So I'm not taking Grayson Allen with any of the three picks. I feel like he should be drafted by the Lakers. Don't ask me why. I think that's where he should end up. Was Jacob Evans picked?
No, he's still available.
Okay. I was just making sure that he was still available on the board. I think he's a pretty good fit for Golden State. He's a strong defensive player. Yep. He shot also fairly well from three in college. And then I think he's somebody who could step into Andre Iguodala's role and end up taking that kind of spot as like the backup to the Draymond Green, Kevin Durant as like a versatile forward.
I like that pick a lot. I think the Warriors would be going wing there, almost no doubt. And there's quite a few wings around. I really like that pick there from the Warriors and you acting as Bob Myers. Now you're Brooklyn. You've got to put on your Sean Marks hat. Greg, pick 29, a selection they got from the Raptors in the Damari Carroll trade. The Nets, they need lots of different things. And you've got, to be honest, there's quite a few players here still available on the board that if they went in the 20s, or even before pick 20, I would say, yeah, that makes sense. I've got at least four or five guys I'm looking at here. They could easily be top 20 players, and they're still available. So there's talent everywhere for you to choose from.
Yeah, so I think here I'm going to go with Anthony Simmons. And the reason is just because I think at this point the Nets should really just be trying to hit a home run with this pick. And not a lot of information on him, obviously, only 19 years old, actually coming out of high school. But seems to be a really good athlete, and I think that this is the kind of pick that you make as a bad team at the end of the first round where you just need talent, and you go with the super athletic young player, and you hope that you can make him into somebody who's a viable NBA player.
Kyle, before Greg finishes us off with pick 30, Simon's there at pick 29, a guy, again, much like Mitchell Robinson, who you just selected for the Celtics, a guy that we didn't see play in college last season, who's declared for the draft now coming straight from high school. It feels like a no-brainer to just take that upside pick on a guy there.
Yeah, I think, as you guys both kind of pointed out, the last two picks, Jacob Evans and Anthony Simons, are it's surprising that they lasted this long into the draft in some respects.
A ton of talent in this draft. And yeah, when we finish this last pick here at pick 30, I'm going to go through a few guys who I would be very comfortable taking top 25 or top 20 who are still left over. And you guys can have a look and see which guys you're surprised are still left. And Greg, you can round us out here at pick 30 with that last selection. The third one for the Atlanta Hawks, they chose at pick 3, Jaren Jackson Jr. And at pick 19, Ali Okobo. So you're back on at pick 30 to finish off the first round.
Yeah, so I'm going to draft another Kentucky player here, Hamidou Diallo. Ooh. So this another thing that I was kind of talking about earlier is there is a long track record of them becoming successful NBA players. We're at pick 30, and I think in somebody like Diallo, you just get a really athletic guard. He didn't shoot well at all in college, which, as I've said before, something like that is a concern for me. Only 34% from three, only 61% free throw shooter, which doesn't give me a ton of confidence in his ability to develop a jump shot. But at this point in the draft, I'll go with the really athletic player, put him on Atlanta, and he should be able to find playing time really quickly because they do not have a lot of guys who are capable of playing NBA basketball.
Yeah, so what you said, the athleticism is huge. The his upside is massive. Out of all the 163 guys that I translated their stats off, he was the worst, the absolute worst out of all those guys I translated. So there is some hesitancy in that pick. So yeah, look, it's fine as a selection there, and you bank on the Kentuckiness and the athleticism of that pick. Now, Kyle, who do you look at as guys who are left over that you're a little bit surprised at?
Guys who you guys think, who got overdrafted?
No, guys that are still undrafted.
Did you guys mention Chandler Hutchinson?
Nope, haven't talked about him yet.
He was kind of at the top of my draft board. Josh Okogie. Did you cover him?
Nope, he's another one that I'm surprised.
I have one also.
Yeah, who's yours, Greg?
So
for me, it was Aaron Holiday, who I actually was considering taking with the 30th pick for Atlanta, but the main reason I didn't was because I'd already drafted a point guard for him. Aaron Holiday is actually going to be in the green room for the NBA draft, and I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being somebody who's way overdrafted. There seems to be a little bit of hype behind him, but he did shoot really well in college, and also somebody who was a really good athlete, very explosive. The biggest concern I have with him is he's a little old, 22 years old, going to be by the start of the NBA season. But somebody who shot the ball as well as he did in college, I think, has potential to find a role in the NBA.
Yeah, so there's a, you know, he's one of a bunch of guys here. Yeah, if I'm going to go through my list of guys who could easily be first-round guys, Gary Trent Jr., Landry Shamet, Aaron Holiday, Chandler Hutchinson, Jalen Brunson, Josh Okogie, maybe Shamesi Metu, maybe Isaac Bonga. They're maybe a little bit... dodgier. Bruce Brown, Grayson Allen, Kenrich Williams maybe from TCU. There's quite a few different guys here. So this draft is pretty stacked in terms of talent and good role player type guys. That will do it for us today. Kyle, thanks for coming on and making your selections.
Josh, if you want to follow me, you can follow me on Twitter at RotoKyleNBA. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Greg, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again, Josh. Everybody can follow me on Twitter at GErenbergDFS, and you could also go to SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, and listen to me talk to myself for about 15 minutes or so every night to break down the following day's DFS slates, Monday through Friday. That is the Foul Balls podcast.
Go check out Greg, go check out Kyle in their various mediums, and of course, leave a 5-star rating for this podcast wherever you listen to it. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Michael Porter Jr.